And welcome to episode 161 of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. My name is Samantha Blackman, and I'm an associate professor here at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, where I talk about, read about, write about, dream about, amongst other things, video games. And I am joined tonight by two of our NYM Gamer podcast co-hosts, Alicia Carabinas and Lee Hibbard. How y'all doing tonight? Oh, mm-hmm. I sent some salt. I sent some salt in the air.
It's just Thursday. I'm tired when it's Thursday.
I'm exhausted when it's Thursday. I feel you. I absolutely feel you. I had to make coffee to do the podcast because I'm like, otherwise I'm going to be sitting there drooling on my mic, sleep.
I thought about it. I considered it also.
I have two beverages. We'll talk about those in a minute.
Why does Thursday got to be so Thursday?
Seriously. Is real Thursday this week, too. So I feel you. All right, let's talk about who we are. Alicia, who are you, darling?
An asshole.
Well, we know that much. Other than being an asshole, who are you?
I'm Alicia Carabinas. I'm a PhD student at Purdue University, where I live to irritate Sam. And I have a lot of feelings about our topic tonight, as you will see very soon.
Well, you are super successful at that irritating part. All right.
It's good to be good at something.
Yay.
I got skills. They do not, however, pay my bills.
I was going to turn that into the Grease song that I got skills. They're multiplying. Grease was a big part of my childhood because my cousin loved that movie. So we went to the movies every weekend and we would watch that movie again and again and again. Because she loved it so much. But then as I got older, like old enough, and I went back and was like listening to, they were actually playing the Grease soundtrack on like the Kids Place Live channel on satellite radio. And that was when I realized that a lot of those songs were rapey as fuck.
Yes.
Can I tell you something? Because I've got a story here. Because, with the important background context that I went to middle and high school for the most part in England when I was living there. When I was in eighth grade, our school decided it would be an awesome idea to put on a production of Grease. Uh-oh. And I was in that cast. So I know that
singing
entire
the rapey
movie.
Songs.
Uh-huh. Inside out, backwards, I know that entire movie. I hate it.
Oh my god.
It gives me horrible flashbacks.
Yeah, I was like, this is horrible. I mean, you know, yeah, it's just date rape music. That's exactly what that is.
Oh, I had a long conversation with some folks today. Well, a short conversation because then I tapped out. About the persistence of certain types of bullshit in media.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself losing patience very quickly today with this conversation because, and I'm just going to say it straight out, we need to stop celebrating media that confirms hatred, that supports hatred, that promotes hatred, because that shit gets people killed.
Yeah.
So I don't have any fucking patience for your problematic faves. Not yours. In general. I'm done today.
Yeah, I'm with you on that today. All right. Well, Lee, we didn't even talk about who you are, darling.
Right,
who are
Lee,
you?
Who are you, dear? Mm-hmm. We broke Lee.
Mm-hmm. Lee.
Who am I, briefly? Let me jump in. I am Lee Hibbard. I'm also a PhD student at Purdue, where my job mostly consists of getting Sam coffee.
Oh, that's your job this year.
Yep. Every Tuesday, Thursday. Almost every Tuesday, Thursday. Some days I don't have time, but I just send her a message like, coffee?
I was going to say, you didn't get me coffee today, and I didn't get coffee.
It's because I was teaching. I was teaching, oh, and I was running late, and I was like, I'm not going to have time. I felt terrible about it, mostly because then I didn't have coffee.
I was going to say, I didn't get any coffee today. Yeah,
I was real sad. My students wanted to, like, actually learn and stuff.
Well, tell them my coffee is real important, just so you know.
Just damn.
Learning? I'm That's not kidding. What you're here for.
It's all about Sam's coffee. Don't forget that. I'm kidding. All right, so now that we all know who we are, let's jump into
do
the...
We what you, do we know?
I'm old. I know who I am. Like I said, I am surly. I'm petty. I'm evil. I'm snarky. I'm all those things. I know exactly who I am. All right, so let's jump into what you're playing, what you're reading, and what you're drinking. Those are all important questions. Alicia, we'll start with you. What you playing, darling?
Stardew Valley, like right now. Like literally right now.
Wait, we had this conversation before we started about the Stardew Valley.
All right, you told me to stop, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
How's that working out for you?
Apparently not too well.
At least you know your limitations. I've also been playing a whole lot of Fortnite Battle Royale, and I'm very angry with you, Sam.
Why?
Because you got me on this thing that I should not like, but that I like. So.
Oh my god, it's so good, isn't it, though?
It's really fun. And what's nice about it is even though it takes a minute for, like, Fortnite is the slowest damn loading game, I swear.
Yeah, it is.
It takes, like, I age a year waiting for that shit to load on my Xbox. Then, you know, you just bop in, you play a game, it takes, you know, at most, with waiting for the queue and getting everything started, you're looking at, like, 30 minutes, maybe 45, if you, like, slow. But I don't even think it takes that long. I've never timed it.
I was going to say, yeah, about 20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, and you can do, like, two or three, and then you feel happy. You've accomplished something. You had at least one really bad luck session, and you swore a lot. Because you went to three buildings and there were no weapons, you had one pretty good one, but then you watched somebody terrible win. And then you have one where you finish, like, you know, 4, 5, 3, somewhere in there, and then you feel good about yourself, and you can stop, and it's done. But at the same time, as, you know, we learned this week, those kinds of experiences are maybe going to start killing some of the better parts of the industry, and that sucks. So I'm angry with you for getting me on this. How dare you?
I'm sorry. But I'll always play with you.
Oh, yeah, I know you will. By play with me, sometimes she means accidentally shoot me in the head.
Oh, sure, that's just fun.
Thanks, sure, buddy.
Or blow you up with a grenade.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, it's good to know that the grenade... So Alicia and I played, what was that, last Friday? Mm-hmm. And I killed her twice by mistake. The first time I accidentally...
Because there is friendly fire. Watch out for that.
There is friendly fire. So, but she was in the middle of a firefight anyway. And so I was trying
like
to help her.
Like, this makes it okay.
And she ran in front of my gun.
Oh, don't help me.
She ran in front of my gun.
Oh,
and
man.
She died.
This is some victim blaming bullshit. Right.
She was going to die anyway. But I'm just playing.
Damn.
And then the second time, we were trying to get out of an attic because some folks were coming up. We were like, okay, we need to run for the next circle. And I meant to pull out my pickaxe and use it. And instead, I threw a grenade. And it blew us both up.
And so the other part of this story is that at one point, somebody who had the same skin as Sam ran up on me and started swinging their pickaxe. And I literally just thought it was Sam dicking around. So I didn't do anything until I realized eventually that, no, this was someone actually trying to kill me with malicious intent. But I just thought it was Sam being Sam.
Sorry.
So in reality, she has killed me more often.
Uh-uh. You can't blame me for that last one.
Oh, but I can, and I do, and I will.
Fine.
Other than that, I've been playing some Overwatch. But, you know, every time they take away Mayhem for other events, it just gets less fun. I really like Mayhem.
How are you liking Mayhem? Are you playing Junkenstein's Revenge?
I did it a couple of times. It just feels like it takes longer than a regular match.
It's super long.
And you know, it's great if you have people who are capable of understanding how things work. And if you don't, it's super frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I did a few.
Yeah, and you can only be, like, one of four characters. You can only be, what is it, McCree?
Yeah.
Soldier 76.
But then there's the other one, there's the Endless, where you can be Torbjorn, so you know how I feel about that. I've just been playing the Grillmaster.
Right, because you got the Grillmaster's degree.
Yeah. So that doesn't bother me.
Well, see, none of those are my usual characters to play with.
Well, you're going to have to get good.
Well, I was going to say, what it has forced me to do play is to learn to play McCree.
Yeah, oh, man, McCree's the worst. What's wrong?
Well, I would actually like to play Soldier, but the folks that I've been playing with, one of them does best with Soldier, so... I've sacrificed myself.
I do really enjoy
I can't be a good Mercy.
Their patter while they're doing the thing, like the dialogue. Found out that Soldier 76 is from Bloomington.
Oh.
That was a delightful surprise. Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that around the house. I was like, oh, hey, he just said he was from Bloomington. And we thought that was pretty funny.
Yep.
Unexpected, but... After the first couple of times, you know, I mean, the fact that it's like an old-timey horror movie is great and everything, but after the first couple of times, it's just like, okay. And anything else? No? Okay. And we're done.
Well, so, I'm just mad that there are no Halloween Diva skins.
Yeah, man, where's a new Lucio skin? Can we get one that doesn't look like a fucking frog? That would be nice.
Yeah, no new Lucio skin, no Halloween Lucio skin, no Halloween Diva skin, no Halloween Tracer skin.
What? Tracer's got tons of, like, offbeat skin, so I do like Zarya's new one, the 80s. That was
the 80s,
pretty funny.
Jane Fonda, let's get physical.
Yes. That one's pretty funny.
So I don't even know why I'm playing, other than the fact that I don't know. Because the only skins I would really want would be a Diva skin.
No, I want the new skins pretty well. And I'm also going to pick up, well, it's on sale, Mercy's Witch skin.
See, I never play Mercy, but that is a sweet skin.
Mm-hmm. I do play Mercy sometimes, and it is a pretty good skin. It's one of my favorite in the game. So now that it's for sale, I'm going to buy it. We've been saving coins since the end of the Summer Games event, so I'm going to be able to get everything I want by the end.
Yay.
But I also have, I'm sorry, Lee, I'm taking up all the space talking about games, but I have a delightful story about my class today.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Thinking about the games that we are playing right now. We're talking about argumentation, so I had my students play the beginning of Depression Quest.
Ooh.
Just so that we could get to the point where they're getting the mechanics where things are crossed off, you know, you can't select certain options. And so I stopped them so that I could ask them what argument the game is making and how it's using the interface to make it. But it took me a few minutes because no one wanted to stop playing Depression Quest. They're like, but wait a minute. I'm like, no, we need to do stuff.
They were like, but we're playing a game.
And they were really into it, and they wanted to talk about, you know, the game itself and more than just the questions that I wanted, which was good. So it was a good, effective example. But by the end of class, they got me to agree to make them a list of similar games.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the third or fourth game that we've played in the classroom. This was the first one that they've, like, really jumped on, and of all the things, that surprised me. It's like, okay, good. So,
ooh, that's good.
Depression Quest today. Out here evangelizing for games with fascinating interfaces.
Nice. So, because have you played her story with them yet?
Yeah, we did that earlier. Lee, when he came on that trip with us this year.
Yes, I did.
Doing that. That's good times.
It was a good time. I got some really good interface and design reports from my students. Most of them were just, like, VR obsessed, so that's probably why.
And nice. Bianca and I will be at the symposium at Ball State in 2 weeks to talk about teaching her story for the past 2 years.
Awesome.
Nice. Maybe Bianca will have a voice by then.
I hope so. Poor Bianca. We're thinking of you. And we love you. Get your shit together.
It's like, get good. I saw her this morning, and she was just like, she was just horribly froggy. Horribly froggy.
Yep. All right. So that's it. Those are the things that I've been playing.
Yeah. Lee, what about you? What you playing, darling?
Mostly Stardew Valley 24/7. I have serious problems. Still, I have to go back to the farm. The farm is life. The farm is comfortable and calm.
And not so stressful. I started something.
We
started talking about it in class, and then everybody started playing again.
That's true. Yeah, in class today, and your sweet daughter is sitting there with her Switch playing Stardew Valley, and I was just like, yes.
I know. She got a Stardew Valley monkey on her back now, too.
It will never end. She's doomed.
What have you done to everyone?
I know.
It's terrible.
The funny thing is right, since I've been streaming Stardew Valley on Mixer, and now I've got, like, a bunch of people on Mixer streaming. Like, they don't stream it regularly, but people will my friends who hanging in my chat when I'm playing that also stream, they're starting to stream Stardew Valley. I'm like, we just gonna have a whole bunch of people on Mixer streaming Stardew Valley. And I keep making a joke about becoming Mixer's premier Stardew Valley streamer. Because I'm going to stream all the Stardew Valleys.
Do it.
And when multiplayer comes out, I might not play anything else.
When multiplayer comes out, I'm doomed.
It's going to be a time. I'll be here with you guys. We'll all just be playing Stardew Valley forever.
Stardew Valley. Mm. Well, when the rest of the world is burning, we have to at least have our own little microcosms of drama. Called Stardew Valley.
So one of my obsessions ever since I got like the catalog is to go through like 14 different versions of ways I can decorate a single room of my house, and then I look up and it's like 7:30 in the evening and I haven't done anything on my farm, and I'm like, oh crap,
now all my chickens gonna be mad, all my vegetables gonna be dead,
everything is dead,
whoops.
Yep.
But your house looks beautiful.
Get good, Alicia, get good. So here's the thing. So there's an update. So just for people who didn't know this yet, an update came out for the Switch today. Now we're going to be able to transfer saves and profiles from Switch to Switch. Ooh. So if Santa does bring my kid her own Switch so she can get up off my shit, I will be able to transfer her saves and she won't have to restart all her games. Or I can transfer my saves, and either way. We'll be able to transfer saves and profiles off of one machine.
I'm trying to decide if you're a good parent or a spoiler.
Why do you say that?
I can't decide. I don't know. It's one of
it's
the
not like I'm
things.
Going out and buying it now. I'm saving it for Christmas.
Yeah.
We'll in see. My defense.
We'll see.
Whatever. Lee, you're playing Stardew 24/7. Stardew. Yeah, I'm also playing Stardew. You playing anything else?
Mostly just silly games on my phone that I play in bed. I started playing Neko Atsumi again.
Oh, no, why? Why would you do that to yourself?
Because my boyfriend got a new phone, and now he can put more than 3 apps on it, and he was playing it, and I went down to visit him 2 weeks ago, and he was like, look at my cats, and I went, shit, I forgot how much I love this game. Help. Send help.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
It's terrible. So sorry. We send each other screenshots of our little cat yards. It's disgusting.
Aww.
Oh, no.
Help. Yeah. Basically, help.
Yeah. Rip, Lee.
Rip.
Yep.
So I've been playing Stardew. I've also been playing Overwatch because I've been playing Drunken Stein's Revenge. I have been playing Fortnite Battle Royale because I have a Fortnite Battle Royale monkey on my back as well. I have different games that I have to play when I'm in different moods. Battle Royale is like the perfect game for me to play on Fridays because I've had a whole week of being pissed off and I just need to shoot stuff or just sit up and talk shit with Alicia, which is what happens on Friday nights because she's been streaming Battle Royale with me on Fridays.
Don't tell anybody. It's my secret shame.
Okay. I won't tell. She's not streaming Battle Royale with me on Fridays at 10 Eastern Standard Time on Mixer. I love you, Alicia. I know. But I've also started playing Minecraft again.
Oh.
What is wrong with you guys and your life choices?
She says
continuing to play Stardew Valley.
Right. But you know what? What all these games have in common is they have a meditative aspect. I'm not playing any games that have like big storylines right now because I need something to just kind of zone out on. So Stardew, I can just go and mine and it's like thunk, 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 thunk. I can go and cut down trees because I started new farms. So I got a whole lot of like clearing and mining to do. And that shit is so calming to me.
Well, come and fix my damn fence.
Hardwood.
I was going to say, I wish we had multiplayer because I got tons of hardwood. Let's see. So in Minecraft, I've been playing Minecraft again because I've been playing Minecraft with my kiddo. And I played like half an hour of Layers of Fear because I wanted to play a game that was a little bit scary, but it wasn't scary. So I like played a half an hour and then I was like,
I'm done. It's kind of gross.
Other people were like, it gets scary after this point. And I was like, no. I played a little bit of Halo 5 with some friends just for fun. And that was about it.
Do you have fun playing that game?
I have fun playing with people when I play that game. I don't have fun playing that game. I'm not a Halo. I'd rather play Destiny than Halo any day of the week. But I have one friend who's not playing Destiny. I have one friend who's not playing Destiny 2. Two, if I count you, Alicia.
I was about to say, I'm also not playing the Destiny.
Yeah, I was going to say. So I've been playing Halo 5 so I can play with her. But that's just like an occasional thing. And that's basically what I play. I haven't played anything new. Even though I've been streaming, I'm like, I'm not starting any new games. Because next week, I almost wept. I'm gonna blame it on the bourbon. I almost wept this week. I came home one day and I was checking my email and Microsoft sent me all my receipts because all the games that I pre-ordered that are coming out next week all hit at one time. And I was like, oh damn, that hurt. So I pre-ordered Assassin's Creed, Wolfenstein 2. They also billed me already for The Sims 4 and Super Lucky's Tale, and those don't come out until the week after. So they billed me for 4 games all at one time. Luckily, I have fake Microsoft money in my account. Otherwise, I'd have been mad.
I'm mad right now.
I want fake Microsoft money.
Fake Microsoft money.
It came from real money. It's really just real money.
I know.
It's not. Don't say that. It's fake Microsoft money. Let me live my life.
I will not let you live your life.
Let me live my life.
No. I'm trying to help you here for you.
So next week I'm going to be playing a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, and I'm going to I'm getting
unlike all the other weeks in which she only plays 5 or 6 different things.
Well, I'm going to be playing a bunch of new stuff next week.
Oh, I see.
And I'm also going to be playing the new Super Mario Odyssey next week. Cuz that comes out next week too. Yeah, on the 27th, we got like 3 big titles launching all on the same day.
Welcome to fall.
I know. Well, you just got shit dropping all over the place. Well, that'll be fun. But since I'm streaming, I play a lot more. I play a lot of different games during the week because I don't want to play the same game when I stream. Even though I did do a creative stream and worked on Cross Stitch this week because I didn't feel like starting a new game and I didn't feel like playing any of the old ones. So I did Cross Stitch, but anyway, because I'm old. Apparently,
okay.
I'm an old white woman in the 1920s.
That's interesting.
I have traveled back in time
and lost all your melanin.
And lost all my melanin.
Okay.
You ignorant. All right.
How do we come out of this conversation and I am the ignorant one?
I don't know. You tell me. All right, so how about reading? Is anybody reading anything interesting?
No, not really. Not anything that would be relevant for this.
Yeah, mostly just stuff for class. Fan fiction, the usual.
Fan fiction, the usual. Well, okay, so I've been listening to something because I thought P would like it. It's a YA novel, Esperanza Rising. It had won like some of the YA lit awards. I want to say it may have won a. What did it win? I have to look. I can't remember. Anyway, so I bought the audiobook and I was like, because I would like to be able to listen to this with her, right? And we were listening to it, and she was like, "Can we turn this off?" And I'm like, "Why?" She was like, "Somebody just died," and I was like, "Yeah." She was like, "Who would want to listen to something that's sad and somebody just died?" And I was like, "Oh, that was pretty stupid." Because the whole thing of is that Esperanza's father dies. And that is what precipitates a change in her life and her kind of economic condition as well. And so, you know. I was like, "Oh, that was stupid. That was stupid, Samantha. Thanks. Thanks for depressing your kid." So I was like, "I'm sorry. Let's turn this off and listen to some like ridiculous shit." So we started listening to Dr. Libris's Library. No, Dr. Libris's Island again. Same dude who wrote Mr. Limoncello's Library and the Library Olympics, where all the shit comes to life when you read a book.
Yes.
And that was much better, apparently, than Esperanza's father getting killed by bandits.
Yes, on many levels. That is in fact better.
So I did some I made horrible parenting decisions with some literature this week, and yeah.
Yep, sometimes you just gotta make bad decisions.
Apparently. Alright, so let's get to the fun part. Who's drinking what? Alicia, what you drinking this week? You drinking some of the concoction you done made up this week?
Nope, they had the triple tail tropical IPA again at the store this week, so ooh. I'm drinking the triple tail.
Of course you are.
It was not as cold as I would like, but I'm drinking it anyway because some things are worth suffering for.
Yeah. Triple tail would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Lee?
I'm over in Liquor Town.
Yeah,
cousin to wine country. I just have some vodka and some tropical fruit juice in a mug, like a classy man.
I like that.
Tropical fruit juice and vodka. Okay. Well, I've been on a bourbon kick for a while, I guess. I've been drinking lots of bourbon. So I'm drinking bourbon. I didn't want to drink. I'm not drinking straight bourbon, of course, or bourbon. I've been drinking bourbon with a little sour mix. And I had bought like some regular old commercial sour mix from the store. And I noticed that like all the sour mix at the store now, even the ones that used to be decent, now have this weird, cloyingly sweet.
Yeah, they're all terrible.
Aftertaste, because they're using artificial sweetener in all of them now.
Yep.
So I had to go out and find a fancy sweet and sour mix that didn't have, and that shit's expensive. It costs almost as much as the bourbon. So I found one that was pretty good. It's a, what was it? It was like Powell and Mahoney or something like that. They're sweet and sour mix, so I'm drinking that with a with the bourbon, and it's pretty nice. Put a little too much bourbon in it, so if I'm and it's a big glass, so if I'm a little tipsy and like slurring my words in a little while, you'll know why.
But yeah, like, that's why I don't drink a lot of sour mixes anymore. Mm-hmm. For that reason, it's just impossible to find anything that's decent, and then you got to take the time to make shit yourself. I've been craving margaritas recently, but, you know, try to get anything that's decent for that without, you know, making it yourself. Good luck.
Yeah, I want to say that the bottle of sour mix itself was like almost $10. Because it's like one of the artisanal ones, right? Where it's like made with real fruit juice and real sugar. I'm like, maybe I should just be making this shit with real fruit juice and real sugar at my house. For this much money. But me knowing how to like make sour mix well would be really dangerous. Because I would never have excuse not to drink bourbon.
Right. Mm-hmm. That would be a problem.
So... some things are best. And I'm drinking coffee because, like I said, I didn't want to be like fall asleep and be drooling on my mic when we were talking tonight. You know what? Don't tempt me, because my Switch is like 2 feet away from me. Okay, so let me just tell you this. I started 2 new farms on the Switch. One that's just for streaming, and then a second one that's just for me. And the one that's just for me, the name of my farm is, of course, Miss Andre. And on the first one, the one that I'm streaming, it's got a farm name that's got something to do with like Mixer or streaming or something. And they were like, "What's your favorite thing?" And I put Miss Andre. So therefore, when I eat the, what is it? It's not star fruit. It's the fruit that gives you like more life. This is funny, right? The fruit that gives you like more life, more HP, is going to say, it tastes like Miss Andre.
Good times.
What does Miss Andre taste like, I wonder?
It's fucking delicious.
Kind of sweet, kind of sour, but oh so refreshing is exactly what that shit tastes like. I'm a horrible human being.
Sandry.
All right. So now that we've talked about all the important stuff, we can go home. Are you making wine? No, I'm kidding. No. We're not talking about making wine. What we are talking about is an article that appeared in the Chronicle of Higher Ed. When did it appear? September 26th, by Hannah McGregor. It's called Podcasting in Plain Sight. And it's interesting because she has written an article for the Chronicle that is about something we've talked about. We've talked about a number of times. I know on the site we've written stuff about, and that's about, getting work that is non-traditional in the sense of not being the, you know, the single authored monograph or being about, you know, specific subject matter, like, you know, Milton or Shakespeare or, you know, Plato or Cicero or any of those dead white motherfuckers. But getting that kind of work not only noticed, but appreciated and accepted as being academic in nature, because McGregor does a podcast about Harry Potter, of all things. And it's called, Witch Please.
Witch Please. Which
I know it's hilarious when I read that. And I was like, ooh, that's so cute. It's called Witch Please. So we thought it would be interesting to talk about the article and to talk about our own struggles, shall we say. We have, some of us have had real struggles and struggled mightily. Some of us are still struggling. So we might have some feels. But to talk about, you know, what it feels like to do game studies as an academic and do game studies and produce scholarship that's non-traditional and get that shit accepted. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. Anybody want to start? Throw that out there like that. If she can stop clicking and making wine, she might start.
No, I was going to wait.
Okay, you can wait. I just want you to know I hear every click of your mouse as you're making wine.
I am about to stop clicking because I'm going to go back to the article. So there you go.
There we go. I think it's interesting, right? Because like I said, she is she's fairly new to the professoriate. I was trying to see, I was going to go look and see, I don't know how often their podcast comes out, but they're only like 50 episodes in. I say only because, you know, we're 160, this is 161 in, right? But then at the same time, I started to think, because she's, like I said, she's new to the professoriate. She's junior faculty. And we're talking, you know, 2017, right, when she's writing this. I don't know that if in 2000, when I was new to the professoriate, right, if I was new tenure track faculty, I don't know if I would have had the nerve at that point to say, I'm going to do a podcast and ask that be recognized as my scholarship. See, because it's 17 years later, I'm tenured, and it's still a struggle to get people to recognize the work that I do as being academic. Right. In any way, shape or form. Right. Because, and then I get really angry sometimes. Because I'm like, really? I'm like, all of four people read your last book. All of four. And one of them was your mama.
Let's be real. People only read about a third of those books.
Right.
Absolutely. Unless they assigned it to their classes. Right. Then the students read them.
Exactly. Or bought them. Mm-hmm. Let's say that. If they bought them, they might not have read them. So, you know, I think what we need to do is we need to start talking about, you know, because we talk way too much about impact factors of journals and blah, blah, blah. What we really need to be talking about is reach. I think the game would change if we started talking about reach. You know, how many people reach? How many people do you reach? Right. How many people read your stuff? Not just do you get your friends to cite it? Right.
Yeah.
Because seriously, when you look at the cost of some of these single author monographs these days, honest to God, when you're talking $200, $150 a piece for these academic books, I know I got friends that come up with these books. I ain't buying them. I'm sorry. I'm a single mother. I'm broke as fuck. I am not paying $150 for your book.
I'm making book lists right now for my dissertation, and it makes me want to die. Like, just die.
Yeah. Yeah. I cannot. I mean,
it shouldn't cost me $1,000 or hours arguing on the phone with the interlibrary loan to write my dissertation.
Well, because those books, like I said, are ridiculously expensive.
And I'm living in an area that doesn't have a whole lot of literature about it. I've read almost everything already that's been done on it. And still, it's like so much money.
But, you know, the big question is, why are they so expensive? They're so expensive because they know nobody's buying them. Nobody's buying them. Nobody's reading them unless they come from the library, because people are not going to spend $200 for a book. Because you know what? You can't read one book and write an article. You can't read one book and write a book. You've got to get multiples of things. So they're not buying them. The libraries are buying them, if anything.
Yep.
So, you know, you people buy books that cost way too much and use them to write other books that nobody's also going to read. I'm just jaded and I'm angry and I'm cranky today for a number of reasons. But I'm tired. I'm tired of people not paying attention to good work that gets done in an area because it's not considered, you know, real scholarship. Right. And McGregor makes a good point in the article when she starts talking about the fact that, how does she put it? When she's talking about grad students, she says, observing those students, we saw unaccountable feelings of confusion, inhibition, and loss. They had identified something broken, dead, or mean in contemporary academic criticism, she wrote, but either they couldn't articulate it or they feared saying it out loud would damage their career prospects in academe. So, you know, when we start talking about, one, what students are interested in, and two, what they're afraid to speak out against for fear of their own careers, that's absolutely ridiculous. So students got to keep, you know, writing about, you know, the character of the devil, of Satan in Paradise Lost over and over again in order to make it in the academy, rather than being able to talk about or to research, you know, the character of the devil in graphic novels or the character of the devil in anime or whatever we're talking about. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? If we have to restrict the work that people do because it's not considered real scholarship.
And so often people self-restrict their work, right?
Yes.
People will come into school excited about working on this or that. And, you know, over time, get ground down. Well, that's interesting, but what if you wrote about this instead? That's interesting is something I've heard a lot. Mm-hmm. And I know what it means. We all know what it means.
Less interesting, it doesn't mean it's less interesting or more interesting. It just means it's what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm. But it starts to become code for, that's cute, but once you grow up, maybe you'll write about this instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I am grown. And I have ideas about impact and reach. And that's why I study video games. It is such a far-reaching form of media with so much impact.
And yeah.
I think mm-hmm. it's deeply important that we interrogate the structures and who creates the structures in video games. And, you know, I'm not going to stop doing that because other people aren't into it. If I was going to stop doing things because other people weren't into them, I wouldn't do anything that I do. I'd be a totally different person. I'd probably be really boring.
Really boring and really bored.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
You'd probably be really boring.
Listen, I know where you live. Next time I deliver you beer, I can poison it.
Oh, don't poison it, please. I like it too much.
Be nice to me then. Anyway, I have something I'm going to address that's in the later half of the article. But Lee, if you want to weigh in, please let me make some space there for you.
Carve out some space. Well, I think that one of the things this made me think of, not just because, of course, it was talking about a Harry Potter podcast, but just the way that game studies and fandom studies have that similar issue where there's just a lack of being taken seriously on so many levels. And it just makes me think of all of the work that I was doing when I was getting ready to apply to PhD programs. And I would have, not my like actual advisor, because she was pretty chill, but there were others who would just be like, are you really going to talk about the video game research you've done? Are you going to talk about the fandom research you've done? Really? Are you sure you don't want to foreground all of the work you're doing in Shakespeare studies and the stuff you're doing with this? And I'm like, why is that more valuable? What makes that better? What makes that more interesting to you? I know it's not just because you're in a literature program. Like, I get that that's part of it. But still, it feels like... It feels like it did when I was in a creative writing major at a major Midwestern university where I wanted to write science fiction and I had to work twice as hard to get half the credit. It still feels like that.
Yeah. It does. And...
Uh-oh, that was a big sigh.
Sometimes. Sometimes there is a lack in these areas because they are new. Mm-hmm. The scholarship doesn't always know what it needs to be or what it wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the scholarship suffers as a result of it. So, I mean, the field itself doesn't do itself many favors in that regard. So I can understand sometimes where some of this criticism comes from. But me, I look at that, I'm like, well, game studies is pretty new, and of course it's going to have flaws, so let's make it better.
Mm-hmm. By but doing that's not it. Just game studies.
No, it's many things.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's when we look back at the scholarship of a developing field, that's par for the course.
Right. And yet when it's us, it's just because, you know, we're all lazy gamers who just want to write about what we play.
Right. We just want to write about what we play. We just want to be touchy-feely. We just want to talk about whatever. Right? We're not doing real scholarship. You know, I mean, it's why, you know, people will folks are still telling grad students, you know, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, I know that's what you want to do. You know what? No, these grown ass people, they can do what they want to do. And, you know, we can't expect the, like you said, we can't expect the field to grow. We can't expect the field to get better if people are not doing research in the field. I mean, I've seen massive growth in what I consider the viability of game scholarship in the last 17 years, right? Because some of the early stuff was problematic in all different kinds of ways because it was, and this is interesting, because it was predominantly being written by folks who were already tenured because it was a safer space to write from. And folks who were writing about games because it was cool or new or because, you know, their kids or grandkids or whatever were playing games. They were like, hey, there's something there. I'm going to write about this. But they weren't, you know, and I hate to say this because I don't. They weren't really gamers. Right. So the scholarship had its own problems then because for those reasons. Right. And it's when we get like new folks, fresh blood, folks that like actually play games, folks that are a part of the community, folks that are invested in the work that they do, doing the work, that it gets better.
Yes.
Right. I mean, and see, you know, we can't just keep. See, that's the thing. We can't keep writing single author monographs for four people. We can't keep publishing in these journals, you know, that has a circulation of, you know, whatever, 1,000 copies or what have you. And then half the people that get them don't read them. I mean, I used to get paper copies of so many journals, and honest to God, they would go right on the shelf when they came in the mail, and half of them I didn't read. So, I mean, that kind of stuff, when we start talking about reach, when we start talking about real impact and not these fictionalized impact factors, when we're talking about, you know, people who podcast, or people who are, you know, writing in online journals, and people who have their work being more freely accessible, then the impact and the reach grows. Right? I mean, and I'm not just talking about us and the work we do. I'm talking about the work that a lot of people do. I'm talking about work like McGregor, right? Like her, like Witch Please. I mean, I'm sure that even though she's junior faculty and people are probably giving her much drama about doing a Harry Potter podcast, more people have heard what she has to say about Harry Potter as a work of literature than what they have had to say about stuff for their entire careers.
True.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit salty today, so
that's all right.
It's reasonable salt.
Alicia, you said you wanted to say something about something later in the article. What?
Yes.
It's like I forgot what it was.
No, I didn't forget. There is a section. Well, she starts out talking about coolness, right? And it's working on multiple levels. So there's what is cool as in what everybody else does. Mm-hmm. But then there's coolness as in distance. Right?
Mm-hmm.
As you were talking about the beginnings of the field and people who were not really gamers writing about, like, the Shredder or whatever, I was thinking here, like, can you imagine somebody writing about Shakespeare who hadn't actually read it themselves? Like, how does that work? Let me write about your notes on Shakespeare. Which actually makes fascinating rhetorical analysis, but perhaps not good literary analysis. So she talks about this idea of coolness and distance and that being where so much of academic criticism happens. But then later she talks about this very active culture of sharing, that they have listeners who are dedicated fans who are fact-checking them constantly, arguing their interpretations, engaging with them, and people who will call them out on usage of terms or enactments of certain behaviors. And, you know, of course there's a lot of criticism on the idea of call-out culture, but you know what? I think that what we're seeing, though, in these communities as she describes them is everything that happens in this so-called cool academic criticism sphere, but at, like, hyperspeed. You don't have to wait 2 years to get someone's response after it gets written and researched and put off, and you get back around to it, and then it goes through peer review, and you get a revise and a resubmit, and then finally it appears in a journal a year later. You get a response right then, and then you in turn can respond, and the knowledge base grows so quickly, and people have a much better understanding after, like, you know, 2 months instead of 2 years. Why are we so terrified of that?
Maybe because they don't want to be, they don't want to be held accountable for, I mean, cause you know, I tell people all the time, if I'm wrong, call me out, you know? And if I think you're wrong on calling me out, I'll say, okay, let's talk about this. I mean, it builds community, and it allows for a kind of discussion and knowledge making that, like you said, is just not there when you're talking about the excessive turnaround time in academic publishing.
And I understand the concern that let me finish this before you jump in, Sam, because it's going to make you mad. Listen to my whole sentence.
Uh-oh.
The concern that public scholarship, with or without peer review at any level, you know, like even just somebody vetting your content, that there's some concern that this scholarship is not going to be as rigorous, that it's not the same care, that you're putting it out quickly and you're not considering as much, you know, all of the various sources that could feed into what you're doing, all of the arguments that could be made. Sure, let's grant those, but here's the difference. There's two differences, I think, that we need to consider here. What we think of as current academic criticism and just the academic publishing cycle in general comes from before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And no, we have now online journals and open access journals and things that, that really help in terms of getting stuff out there and increasing that reach and increasing access. The model itself comes from before the internet. Now, I mean, it gets sped up a little bit because you can email things to people now for review instead of mailing it to them. But the model itself persists. So you do have that very slow cycle. But we're writing about and researching and responding to the phenomena that are happening much, much faster than they used to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, we did an exercise. I'm in a class right now on intersectional research methods. It's very fascinating. We did an exercise the other day in which we're thinking about how we would approach studying the phenomenon of mass shootings, the contemporary mass shootings mm-hmm. in the United States. We're looking at the last, 10 years. And we made some interesting discoveries in just doing quick data collection that the cycle of conversation after a shooting is about 3 days. On day four, everything begins to drop out of not just the news cycle, but conversation. Yes. The Google searches drop dramatically. Things mm-hmm. return to normal at that point.
Yep.
And by the time you can even finish researching or even start thinking about what you want to research for the shooting, there's another one and another one and another one. Yep. And so you can limit scope and say, I'm only going to research these three shootings, and in 3 years I'll have an article published on that. Or you can make it an ongoing, persistent, live, public project. You can put it out there. People can send you feedback. You can change the knowledge that you are creating, and it becomes real and useful and interesting as these things are developing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which one of those models is better in this world?
What's more useful? What gives us knowledge, data?
When we need it. Exactly. I don't need we don't need this stuff in 5 years. We need different stuff by then.
Because everything's changed. Well, everything will have changed in 5 years.
I mean, the research we would do on Sandy Hook right now would not fit what we would research looking at, the Pulse nightclub shooting or the concert shooting in Vegas. It's not the same.
No, we need to know about it to look at history and how things evolve and to talk about projections, but it's not going to be useful in the moment. Absolutely. I mean, and all those are things that we need to think about, things that we need to consider, right? Things that we need to work with. And I always, no offense to Milton scholars, but I always make those jokes about Milton and Paradise Lost because I don't know. Maybe secretly I hate Paradise Lost. but I mean, so I'm going to give a different topic. A different example. So Taming of the Shrew instead of Paradise Lost. And there are really only so many different ways that you can talk about Paradise Lost or Taming of the Shrew without starting to think beyond the traditional, right? So, if you want to talk about, how we see, similarities and tropes in other kinds of media, then that's there. I mean, nobody is saying that the traditional scholarship and the topics that are covered in traditional scholarship have to go away.
No.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the feeling that people feel threatened. People feel threatened by work that is done, outside of the traditional box. It's like, oh, they're doing games, or oh, they're doing comics, or oh, they're doing, even to go back and say television or movies or music, and all that is, all that low class, not high culture, low culture shit is going to replace the work that we do. No, but if you want to make the work that you do remain valid, remain important, remain interesting. Right. To talk about, to go back to that notion of interest, not only to graduate students, but to students and to the world in general. you know what? You kind of connected to something outside of shit that was written 100 years ago. You know, stuff that's, you know, been covered by dead white men, you know, look at different points of view. And be okay with that. Right. So, you know, maybe the notion of what's cool changes. I hate that word. I hate that word with the fire of a thousand suns. I hate when people start talking about stuff being cool. No, I don't need stuff to be cool. I don't need the rhetoric of cool. No, I need shit to be real and useful. That's just another pet peeve of mine, so I ain't gonna talk about that. I mean, because I still can't. I mean, it's. I'm 17 years into doing, you know, game study scholarship. I shouldn't still have to be, you know, fighting the fight of whether or not my scholarship is actual scholarship.
And yet.
Mm-hmm. And yet. Right? And yet. When do we get past that? When do we get past that? Is a huge question. I mean, and all that
I
shit.
I think the question is, do we get past that?
Do we get past it? Right. I mean, a lot of it, like you said, right? It's like, oh, but, you know, it's not serious scholarship. It's not well-researched. It's not, you know, it's not this. It's not that. It's just to, you know, it didn't take her 5 years to write that, so it must not be well-written, right?
Yeah.
That kind of bullshit. I mean, it's gatekeeping.
It is.
It's absolutely gatekeeping. Well,
especially because I feel like, and this may just be, like, my experience with Not Your Mama's Gamer and with the stuff that she was writing, McGregor was writing, is a lot of the people who are doing these non-traditional forms of scholarship are, you know, queer women and people of color.
People of color. Who are
marginalized. Everybody who's from the margins. Look at that. I wonder why. Why could it be that marginalized people are turning to different outlets? Could there be a theme here? Something that's driving people who have, like, similar issues to look elsewhere?
Yeah.
Let's analyze that. Let us turn our cool academic lenses upon that commonality. What could we discover?
Our cool academic lenses.
I don't know if any of us have a cool academic lens.
Looks like I do. Cool as shit.
Alicia, what's her cool academic lenses? I'm not cool. I've come to. My kid thinks I'm cool. That's good. That's good enough for me. But I'm not. I play video games.
I'm great.
If that makes me cool, then maybe I'm cool. You know, and maybe that's the problem, right? Is that if we are cool, then we can't be serious. At least not as academics.
Oh, but men can.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
God, yes, they can. Men can. They can be cool academics.
Men can do all kinds of things that women can't do.
God damn it, Lee.
I'm sorry. I'm still salty about that book we had to read for Sam's class. I'm still...
I'm really sad. I forgot. I'm really sad we didn't talk about that on the podcast so that I could be smugly vindicated.
Look, you can be smugly vindicated now, but in a way, I do think that it's relevant because it talks about those kinds of low cultures. And the book Ready Player One, which I tried to like, I will be real. I tried very hard to like, and not because I don't trust Alicia. I trust you with my life. You're one of my best friends.
Oh, thanks.
But it was assigned for a class, and it's doing some interesting things. And I was like, okay, let's get into it. But the more I listened to it, because I listened to it on audiobook, the more it was screeching at me that this was self-insert fanfiction by a white guy. Mm-hmm. And that made me angry, and this is something that McGregor touches on in her article, is that fandom is the province of young women, for the most part. Young women and queer fans and people of color and other marginalized identities. And if you write, read, study fan fiction, you are taken less seriously just as a whole. It's, you know, playing around with someone else's toys. You're being silly. You're not making your own content. You're not doing anything interesting. Ernest Cline comes along and he writes Ready Player One, and now he's got this best-selling novel and a movie deal.
With Steven Spielberg.
With Steven fucking Spielberg. Like, yeah. Shit, dude.
And I mean, you know, we did see something similar with 50 Shades of Grey franchise, but I think it is important that we're back to this idea that fandom and fan fiction in particular, being the province of marginalized bodies.
Yep.
Why? Perhaps, there's a radical thought. It's because we don't exist.
Unless you put yourself in there.
Regular media.
Mm-hmm. Right. You have to put you have to, it does, you do have to insert yourself there because nobody else does it, right?
Absolutely. I started creating like what I didn't know was fan fiction when I was like 10. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wanted to be Robin Hood so badly, you guys. I was so angry that I could not be Robin Hood, so I just decided that I would be Robin Hood and nobody could stop me. I was in my backyard. I could do whatever the fuck I wanted. I chopped limbs off the trees. I got in so much trouble. I made bows. I robbed the rich. I gave to the poor. And then I became a character in Star Wars, and I did all these wonderful things, and then I began to write stories, and I did that. And it made me happy. And as a kid, I wasn't analyzing these things. But it was because I wanted to be able to see myself next to my heroes. And I couldn't do that unless I fucking did the work myself as a child.
Yeah. I didn't want to be Robin Hood. I wanted to be Spider-Man. Because there
I
know, were
I'm
no...
I'm pretty sure that your hands would be sticky, and I can't do that.
Well, that's the thing, is that I wanted to be Spider-Man because the only female superheroes that we had for, you know, at that time was Wonder Woman. And, you know, she didn't, like... She had a lasso of truth. And an invisible jet. She didn't, like, get to, like, kick people's asses. Mm-hmm. In the same way. Yeah. So I wanted to be Spider-Man.
That's legit. You know, I just can't have sticky hands. I'm not judging you. I just can't be
It doesn't come out of your hands. It comes out of the little thing on your wrist. So your hands
but you know what? Your hands are... I don't know if how your body is, but my hands are right there next to my wrist.
Well, fine. Maybe you would have sticky hands if you were Spider-Man. Now I want to be Batman. Because gadgets. Cool-ass gadgets. And you can be surly.
Asshole,
yeah, you can be surly as fuck, right? Right?
Yes.
Yeah. You can, like, growl at people all the time.
Oh, yeah. I don't get to do that because...
Well, and I think that, you know, thinking about it, I was sitting here going, you know, who did I relate to when I was a little kid? And the thing that first jumped to my mind was Han Solo, because I was still am a huge Star Wars geek. But then I also thought about the fact that it actually wasn't, but it was because it wasn't supposed to be, because as a transgender person who came out very late in life, it didn't feel acceptable for me to relate to Han Solo because that was too much like being a boy and I wasn't allowed to be a boy. So I went, oh, okay, I'm supposed to be into Princess Leia, right? I'm supposed to want to be her, right? I'm supposed to, you know, dress up with the cinnamon bun hair and do this. And I'm like, but I want to be a smuggler.
Right?
Okay,
I want to do that.
She was badass.
Oh, yes. And I'm very happy for that. But it just makes me, and this is something that I wonder a lot, is like as a trans person who's, you know, almost 30, would I have come out earlier if there had been more transgender representation in the media that I consumed? Yeah. Would I have figured that out earlier in my life instead of when I was fucking 27 years old?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Would you have figured it out earlier? Yeah, would you have figured it out earlier? Would you have seen it as being acceptable earlier, right?
Yeah, and it's mind-boggling to me. And I do think that's very true because a lot of the friends that I have online who are also in fandom have either started working on or figuring out their trans identities much earlier. Like, many of them are still, you know, in their late teens, early 20s, and they're like, yep, I figured that earlier. And it's because either they read a piece of media, you know, some sort of story where there was a trans character, or, and this is extremely common, they read fan fiction that turned various characters into transgender characters, creating their own representation mm-hmm. and acting like it was both okay and normal and a possibility.
Yeah.
But you know what? Scholarship isn't supposed to do that. Scholarship is just supposed to have you sit in your seat and learn shit. It's not supposed to, you know, make you think make you learn something about yourself or the world around you. That's not what scholarship does. Right? That's why it doesn't matter if we keep doing the same thing over and over again, because we can have a new take on the devil in Paradise Lost every, you know, couple years, as long as you have a solid Milton scholar doing it. Okay, I'm not snarky at all. But, you know, and that's the thing, right? Because when we start getting into the work that our work should do, right? The work that our scholarship should do. I think that is another important thing when we start talking about moving outside of the traditional. Because I'm sorry, I don't want to do scholarship that doesn't add something or give something back to the world.
Yes. Yesterday, this week has been like 4 weeks crammed into one. Yesterday, we were talking about in class projects that we were doing for that class. And shout out to my mafia playing community. I was talking about them. And professor asked, what is it that's driving you right now to do this project? And I was ready to answer that one. I said, I want to show somebody something that nobody's ever seen. I want to show the world something that nobody's ever been able to see, because it has been gatekept and protected and hidden. Mm-hmm. And there's this entire flow of like design and community feedback and so much more that's happening with these games created by very dedicated amateurs who are mimicking a workspace on their own time just because. And it's professional and organized, and it allows us to see the mechanisms of design that we never get to see. And I get to say, look, we can see this now. It's amazing that we can understand how these things come together and how we all get to take part of them and how the creation might have an impact on what's there. Because it's obvious. Of course the creation and who it creates has an impact on the thing that's created. That's all of art and literature. And yet we don't get to see it in games. That process is not visible.
Because games are low culture.
And, it's not great just that. Literature. It's that the industry prevents us from seeing it for a lot of reasons. Some of which are valid and some, I would argue. But I get to do something with this project that allows me to create a better world than the one I entered.
Yes.
That's amazing. I am overwhelmed with the responsibility of it, but also just drunk on the idea that I can fix something that I noticed was a problem.
Idea as in bourbon.
I hate y'all. I'm all excited. I'm like passionate. But can you stand on my desk and start declaiming? Motherfucker's undermining me.
Well, I think that that's one of the things that motivates me so much to study fandom spaces and fanfiction writing communities. And this is like the project that I did for Sam's class that I ended up presenting at Computers and Writing, where I was looking at specific instances of homophobia in the Homestuck community and how that drove people to create other writing communities that they felt safe in. It was all through meeting through hashtags. And I'm looking at this community that created its own safe space using a metacommunicative tool, which is not something that you hear very much about, but it's like active community formation, active community protection, community evolution, and it's just sort of thing that people don't see very much of, but it's there, and the impact is so obvious. And so I wrote about it, and I shared it with my friends in the community, and they were like, you know, thank you for writing this. You know, getting all of these screenshots together was a huge pain, but if you can use this for something valuable, if you can do something about this, even if it's just putting the word out there, even if it's just pointing out that communities do this, that it's worth something, that it's worth us having to put up with people saying horrible homophobic things to us on the internet. It's worth the garbage death threats and the horrible things that happen. We can maybe make something better out of it.
Yeah, I mean, and if we can look at, you know, so oftentimes we start to think about the ways messages get carried, the ways worlds get built, right? Folks want to talk about world building, right? World building is big, and I'm teaching a world building class right now.
Yep.
But you have folks who are like, well, we can talk about world building. We can read all these epics. You know, we can read Homer, and we can read, you know, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say Milton. We can read all these epics and talk about the ways worlds get built. Yes, we can. But when we start talking about building interactive worlds, when we start talking about building worlds that we experience in a different way, we start talking about building worlds for animation, when we start talking about building worlds for movies or for film, when we start talking about building worlds for games, the game changes because the way those worlds get built also changes, right? It's not just the way that a world gets written. It becomes the way that you interact with that world that adds to the world building as well. It's not to say that literature is not interactive, but it's not interactive in the same way. Mm-hmm. Right? And you can't take and this is nobody I know, you can't take a Milton scholar and stick him in a classroom and say, okay, we're gonna teach 30 or 25 CGT kids how to world build for video games. No, you can't. You can't unless that person also plays games, because they don't know how to translate. And this is important. They don't know how to translate what goes on in the literature into a discussion of video games. They don't know how to say, here's where we see parallels in games, unless you play games. And I'm not talking about playing Candy Crush on your phone. I'm talking about real games with epic storylines. And I'm not just talking about one game with an epic storyline, but a number of different games. What'd you say?
Nothing. I didn't say a goddamn thing.
You did too. I missed it. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
I coughed.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Lee heard me.
But seriously, Lee, put it in chat for me so I can see it.
I'm not getting into this. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. I just work here. I'm just chilling. Just living my life. Just going on.
I mean, in all seriousness, you know, and so because I'm also teaching a tech and teaching a first year comp course. It's an online course. It's a course that's meant for like K-12 teachers as well. But to talk about, we've been going back and looking back historically at computers and writing scholarship and the struggles that people had in terms of starting to think about how things translated when they first started using computers in the classroom, right? I mean, we've had these conversations before in the field, right? So what's so different about having these conversations again with a different medium, other than the fact that, guess what? It's games. And folks want to say games ain't real. Games, you know, that's child's play. It's games, right? But if we start talking about reach again, we're talking about games. And we're talking about the fact that for several years now, games have economically outpaced everything else in terms of entertainment media. If that ain't real, I don't know what the fuck is. We can't ignore that. right? Unless we're going to go back to trying to force, you know, it's a force feed knowledge, quote unquote knowledge, scare quotes, right, into students' heads and going back to the banking model and saying, here, sit here and learn this, right? And don't bring anything you know about interactivity or world building or characterization or anything else into the classroom because it's not valid. Because they come into that classroom and they know more about all that shit than you than the people ever want to give them credit for. If you could just give them a way to talk about it and give them a way to say, okay, so let's talk about like connections that we see between this. I mean, if literature is your thing, then let's talk about the connections we see between this and literature. You know what? Because that's going to give them a better understanding of your content than they would get otherwise. But you're too busy telling them that's child's play and has no place in the classroom. That's bullshit. And it makes me angry. So, nah. I still want to know what Alicia said. Did not. Oh. I'm salty and angry all the damn time these days.
Yes.
But then you know what? I got to say this too. Because I listen to a lot of podcasts. I ain't going to call nobody out. And this is not anybody who is probably listening to this podcast at this moment. But you know what really pisses me off? When we start talking about content creators, but we got some half-assed content creators out there, right? I listen to a bunch of podcasts, and some of them I only listen to once or twice because I give you once or twice to fuck up before I be like, you know what? I'm not listening to you no more. But even when you get content creators who are also doing the same thing, they're not playing the games. I understand you don't have time to play a bunch of games. You know what? But if you haven't had time to play all the newest games, don't talk about the newest games by saying, I watched a video. Because that's not going to cut it. Because oftentimes and this may be just me being judgmental about what I hear, right? But oftentimes it's those people that be like, well, I didn't play it, but I watched a video and here's what I thought. Those knee-jerk reactions to content that they have seen and not interacted with themselves is often seriously flawed. You can't half-ass it in any way. So going back to what Alicia was saying, yeah, I see why some people may feel, you know what, this is not real. But that's not the content that we're creating as academics, because we're taking our training as academics and bringing it to content creation that's outside of the traditional scholarly content. Cause I'm not gonna half-ass and bullshit the content that I create, even if it's outside of the traditional, because that's just not the work that I do. I mean, I know people do, but that's not me. So even if you're a content creator that's a non-academic, don't half-ass that shit. Just say, guess what? I'm not playing new games. I'm playing old games. Let's talk about these old games. Let's talk about all this great stuff that we've seen in, you know, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time that I've now played 37 times. Okay, you played that shit 37 times. Tell me all about it, because you know all kinds of nuances about that game that I will never see because I'm not going to play that shit 37 times.
I'm sure not. Not Ocarina.
Oh my God, you's hateful. You and I don't like anything other than the 8 and 16-bit Zeldas.
I like the Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, that's because that's a good-ass game.
Okay. Let me be a hater.
I will. I have no choice.
I'm going to do it anyway.
I have no choice. That's not going to change. You naturally just haterific. But I love you for it, though.
Naturally haterific.
It worked better than Hatalicious.
Ooh.
I'm gonna get naturally haterific tattooed on my body.
Do it.
Woohoo, tattoos. They still think we need to go get the them gamer logos tattooed. I mean, at this point, I have invested more time in this endeavor than I have in any other academic endeavor. So I don't feel bad about getting it tattooed on my bodies.
I'm always down for a tattoo, you know, if I have money. That's the problem.
You know, a plasma center up in Wabash Landing.
I'm not allowed to donate blood.
Oh.
Yeah. Way to
right.
go.
Right.
for several reasons, actually. One of the weirdest ones is I lived in England during the mad cow disease epidemic, so they won't let me donate blood. Mm-hmm. Even though it's been like 12 years.
And you all manners are queer, so they probably mm-hmm. you probably can't donate for those reasons too.
Yep, pretty much. They're just gonna be like, no, your blood's too gay, obviously.
Too gay.
That's how that works.
You all manners are queer.
Yep.
You know, and noisy about it. I would just like to announce that I don't know if they can make we get like a card, like the organ donation card. But I want a card that says I will accept gay blood.
I will accept gay blood,
please
gay
give
organs.
Me the gay blood.
Listen, give me all the gay tissues and fluids.
Yeah. I got some salty ass opinions about that, which are actually just straight up anger about that after the Pulse shooting. I mean, people were circulating around the internet like they wanted to go and donate blood and plasma to their friends who had been affected.
But they couldn't.
They couldn't. Didn't matter how much of a crisis it was. They weren't allowed.
Yeah, unless you could say that you had you've been abstinent for what is it, like 3 years or something?
It's
if you're
something
a gay man?
Nuts like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't donate. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember it very clearly. A friend of mine who lives in Florida was talking about it, and I remember another friend who just said, they really just want us to die, don't they? And it was just it shook me. That whole thing was oof.
So, according to Tiny Twitter Fingers, Mike Pence wants to hang us all.
Yep.
You know, after this goes live, I'm going to be on everybody's watch list next week, right? Woo, because, you know, what's her name? The new press secretary going to be up on stage calling me out and telling the university that I should be fired for calling them Tiny Twitter Fingers.
Come on, you can come up with better / worse nicknames than that. That's hardly
the
worst thing.
Oh, I definitely can. I like Tiny Twitter Fingers because that shit is funny.
Oh, yeah, that's funny as hell.
Anyway, any final thoughts about the McGregor piece? I know we have, and I'm just saying the McGregor piece and not about talking about the acceptance of non-standard, non-traditional scholarship, because I know we could argue about that shit for 47 years. At least I could. So I guess that makes a great opportunity for that to bring us to the end of episode 161. See, I got the right number that time. So that's going to bring us, I'm going to ignore it. That's going to bring us to the end of episode 161. So until next time, when we have episode 162, and we have a good lineup for 162, but it's going to have to be a surprise because I don't like to tell in advance just in case. So until then, I will say to you, my friends, stay warm, stay safe. And as always, game on.